12-year-old Lee Spencer is in the back seat of his family's car as it's pulling up the driveway of the house they are moving into. Lee notices a young girl looking at him from the upstairs window. No one else in the car sees her. This is the beginning of a 4-year journey of Lee Spencer's unbelievable events that happened in and outside of that house. Spencer's Ghosts, available now on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple, any place you get your books. Available in paperback and ebook.
Hey, this is Nomar Slevic, author of UFOs Over Maine, and you're listening to the Ghosts in the Valley podcast.
Okay, today I have Spooks and Ghouls International on the show, and joining me today is John Paul. Daniel, his partner, cannot make it, having technical difficulties. But Daniel is a medium and a paranormal investigator and researcher. But John Paul is a paranormal investigator since 2018, has appeared on German TLC and also on the Discovery Channel. Welcome to the show, John Paul.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and we had all these technical difficulties coming all the way from the UK.
We've got bad weather coming. We've got a massive band of rain at the moment. Obviously, you know what's happened in Spain and Europe. It's due to hit us as well.
Yeah, I've seen the weather channel. These guys are kind of getting soaked.
That's an understatement.
Yeah.
Just got to be able to go out and shower soon in it properly.
Well, I want to welcome you to the Ghost in the Valley. I know I've been on your show, and I've been looking forward to having you guys on mine. And hopefully after the beginning of next year, we'll have you back on, and Daniel can join us then.
Yeah, I'll get Daniel over here.
Okay, Daniel, do you both investigate together?
Yes, me and Daniel have been working since February of 2018. I met Daniel, I did an event where I was basically left on my own to run, and I took 30 people round an old RAF base in 2018. And unfortunately, the law states you have to have 15 people to every one, basically, person. So I was on my own. Daniel was the first one that turned up, but Daniel shows a lot more enthusiasm. He had the energy, had everything that I hadn't seen before in anyone. But Daniel was actually 12 years younger than me, so he's like a little brother now. Mm-hmm. But we both loved this camp. Binbrook was massive for us. It was Spooks and Ghouls. Obviously, this is the second Spooks and Ghouls. We had Spooks and Ghouls to start with. Massive following. Huge it was. And, of course, me and Daniel took it everywhere. But I've never investigated anywhere without Daniel. Now, Daniel investigates places on his own, but he'll only do it during the day. But at night, it's the two of us. I mean, I've done a few museums on my own, but other than that, it's... we do it all together. Everything's together. We research together. We look at things together. We prep together. If I say to him, oh, Dan, we've got this, he'll go, well, I've got this. And we'll go, right, we'll do that, that, and that. We'll book a weekend away and we'll do it. But, yeah, no, I've done everything near enough with Dan since 2018.
Now, is Spooks and Ghouls International, is that your investigation team name and your podcast name?
No, so we got Spooks and Ghouls International is the main, it's supposed to be the main company. Then we've got Spooks and Ghouls Returns, which is on Facebook. Then we've got Spooks and Ghouls International Podcast, which is a podcast show. We've got Ghostly Guardians, which is the start of, hopefully, we're going to build our charity for anti-bullying campaign in the paranormal, because me and Daniel, unfortunately, we've witnessed, a lot of people are with Parunity, but something happened in the UK regarding Parunity members here, and it affected nearly my team, to which we nearly lost a contract. And at the time, we were told there was to be no recordings or anything sent to the tabloids. And unfortunately, 3 months later, just as I'm about to sign the contract, in one of the magazines, turns out to be an article, a fake article at worst, of an event that we did with another team at this location. So we don't believe in the Paranormal. We think it's purely for bullies. So we've opened up Ghostly Guardians now. And obviously, both me and Dan suffer with mental health. We have physical and mental illnesses and disabilities. And we're starting to work with people alongside that. Now, I've spoken to a few people already online, Americans, believe it or not, and they seem to think Ghostly Guardians would be better than Paranormal. But I also work along... I haven't worked with him properly yet, but I think it's Barry R. Frankish is his name.
Mm-hmm.
And he does paranormal something. Proud to be paranormal. That's his. He doesn't do Paranormal either. He just does Proud to be paranormal. So we're part of that. But yeah, there's. I think Paranormal, if I'm honest, is a word that shouldn't be used.
Mm-hmm.
Within our field. Our field is absolutely... I've seen better behaviour at a creche or a primary school. I'm not joking.
Wow.
This week alone, I've seen 4 teams quit and 5 of my friends.
Oh, why is that?
It's just the paranormal's falling apart. I don't know if you know, but Halloween I did a guest appearance with Scott Wise. And it was between 12 a.m. and 1:30 a.m. my time. So it was prime time for investigations, live feeds.
Uh-huh.
We've both gone online. We're both online checking and researching all sorts. And there isn't one paranormal live on Facebook on Halloween.
Wow.
That's American, UK, and even Europe. Because I'm linked to Europeans as well. Not one.
Yeah, I think that most of the people that do that, they get most of their views on a replay. You know, I know I was on a couple myself. You know, we had like 2 or 3 that jumped in. But on the replay, there was like maybe 300 or so. I mean, or more.
It's ridiculous.
But, you know, I'm like, where are they, you know? Yeah.
Where are our lives? You know, this is the biggest day in our field. And yet, there's nothing.
Yeah, it can get discouraging, you know. So, do you guys use your gifts, like when you investigate, you know, being a medium or...
Odd how me and Dan work when it comes to using our gifts. For me, so I'm basically the equipment. Daniel does the confirming. So I'll go into a room and say, right, I can feel this, I can feel that, I can see this, but it looks like this. Now, we actually did a show with Jenny and Jacob. They'll shoot me if I don't remember their name. But I did it. But it was alive 3 days ago. Floyd. Jenny and Jacob Floyd from Kentucky. And while they were in the car, while we were interviewing them in their car, SUV, me and Dan picked up on 2 shadows. One was the grandfather, which Daniel identified. I didn't see him. I only saw what looked like a fae. But it wasn't there. It wasn't dangerous or anything like that. It was just a tall figure, pointy head, but it was sat behind her. Now, the problem I had was Jenny's just had major surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And about, as an empath, I picked up on her pain. And you can actually see me physically in pain during the live feed, exactly. And I'm telling her where this pain is. While that's going on, Daniel's telling her about the grandfather figure. And between the two of us, we basically nailed everything, even though we're... In the UK, I don't do remote viewing, and Daniel just started it, but we were seeing and telling the same things to the point that Daniel even started picking up pain. It's so odd how it works.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel's, I'm like a K2 EMF. You walk into a room, blah, 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 there's that. Daniel will go in and go, right, I can confirm that's there, and that's there. But now we'll get the equipment out as our third source, and we'll use our equipment to confirm that.
I always said your body, you yourself, is the biggest tool, you know?
Of course it is, yeah.
That's what I feel anyway, because I'm the same as you. You know, I can feel when I go in some place, I know exactly what I'm looking at. You know, it's weird, you know? And I've been on other investigations where I've had equipment and cameras and audio equipment, and and I'm not getting anything, you know. And then sometimes I'll see last year was the first time I've seen in a long time, I've seen a shadow figure, you know, at a house.
Oh, and nice. And then
he's seen one behind me. So the house was, it was definitely active. And you know that when you, if you're an empath, you know when you go in someplace, or like you said, like you could feel her pain, you know. Yeah, that's interesting, you know. But on the equipment level, do you have anything you'd like to use that's more than another?
Well, yeah, me and Daniel, very unique. Now, we've watched a lot of English teams work. We've worked with a lot of English teams. And it's just the same old K2 EMFs, REM pods and stuff like that. And to me, that's boring.
Uh-huh.
You know, you have to spice it up. If you want to be in our field, you have to be unique. It's the only way you get attention, is to be unique. Now, obviously, speaking to Americans, yourself, Canadians and that as well, and even Western people now, I've started speaking to people from Western countries in Europe, we've started taking your ideas and adapting them, how we investigate. Because in the UK, right, for example, American people would go into a house, they'd look for all the electricity points within a house. In the UK, I've never seen that happen before. With any team, we've just gone straight in and assumed, there's that, get on with it. Now, like I said to Daniel, you have to be unique within this field. We use robots.
That's interesting.
And when I say robots, it's Halloween toys. Let me ask you something.
Yeah.
When you go past, when you're in, we'll say, think of one of your big shops. I can't even think of one of your big shops now. But you go into one of them, and you've got your Halloween decorations.
Like Walmart?
Yeah, we'll go with that. You go into Walmart, you have a look, you see all these Halloween decorations, but they're the electronic ones with batteries. So in order for it to work, you either have to walk past it, or you have to click physically in its face for it to go off. Now, if I'm stood in the middle of a 30-foot room, and I've got video footage of this all happening, and I've got 20 of these toys, robots, around me, at least 10 to 20 foot apart from me, and I'm stood in the middle, and these robots are going off on their own, can you say that's paranormal, or could you say I'm interfering with it?
That's interesting.
Because you cannot manipulate a robot.
Mm-hmm.
Not a battery-operated one. If you're away at distance, you cannot manipulate a robot.
Wouldn't you say the spirits run off of energy, though?
Correct. That's what sets it off.
Mm-hmm.
Because they feed off the batteries, don't they?
Right.
So that's your trigger.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what sets it off. We've done it so many times now, me and Daniel. We got trip bots. I've got robots with infrared beams now. So we put them in the doorway. And as soon as that line trips or something walks through it, the robot will follow it.
That's really cool.
That's where me and Daniel have got to now with investigating.
And that's where you stepped out in front of us from other people, you know, like you say, be unique. I've always said that, you know, got to be unique or bring something different to the table.
You do in this field. And the way it is, you know, as well as I do, it's the same old stuff, isn't it? People, we're either faking it or it's K2 EMF. Oh, look, it's going off. What people don't realize is, while this person's got this K2 or EMF in their hand, they've also got their phone in their hand, recording. Of course it's going to go off.
Yeah, I try to debunk everything, you know, like during an investigation. You know, try to, you know, debunk it before you say, oh, there's a spirit or there's a demon, or which, you know, very rare. So, you know, I try to debunk everything, you know, and usually you're like 70% of the time it's not haunted, you know. But then those ones that are very active, and you have to know how to investigate that.
Yeah. Well, you know, our live feeds. Yeah, I do the same, to be honest. It's like I spoke to, I think it's Paranormal Unveil. Two young ladies, and I was talking to them about, and the question I brought up was, how would you talk to a murderer when investigating? Would you talk to him as a person, or would you talk to him as a killer?
I would probably talk to him as a person.
Everybody says that. At least me, I've done this. So I'll tell you what I've done. Me and Daniel do this a lot. We don't talk to him as people. This is why we're studying serial killers. We are trying to learn how to not get into their heads, but talk like them. Like they're we were on the same wavelength sort of thing. So I took a group of people to do an event at Derby Gull, which is owned by Richard Felix. Those that know, he was part of the Most Haunted team in the UK. He's one of the mediums. And he's got this interesting little setup where in one of the rooms there is just various information about, I think it's two or three killers in there. And one of them, I twigged, was he'd basically killed and raped his 6-month-old niece and I believe his 7 or 8-year-old nephew. Now, people at the time, we had a lot of skeptics. They were very young people. We're talking 18 to 30. They weren't on the ball. They didn't believe in any of this stuff or anything. And I had my tablet and it's a word generator app I was using. And in this room, I was provoking it, trying to get it to come out. And because I knew he basically raped them, it's as horrible as this sounds, it's the only way I got this. I got a response, and that was I basically asked it in front of 18 people whether he went in dry or whether they were wet when he raped them. And the first word that came up within 30 seconds, and I'm sure I've got the footage somewhere still, was the word dry. After that, I had the K2s, the EMFs, all my recorders going off. I had the whole of these people, all these people, this big group of people started talking to it. It was getting to do things. All the REM pods were going off. Everything was just going mental. And it was because I spoke to him in his lingo. Before that, it was dead. We flatlined. I was at a point where I was going to stop it all. That's how bad it was. But then all of a sudden, I changed how I approached, like I'm a killer, basically. Like I'm his best friend, you know? It's weird because Daniel did the same. Daniel did the same in the other room. There was a guy, I don't know who he was talking to, but he was talking to, he'd been involved in lots of fights and he killed somebody in a fight. And Daniel was shouting, punch me, punch me. And believe it or not, he got hit. He wasn't punched. He was just, you know, how they flick you or move you sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
He's like, get out of my face. He got that. And people saw it. I don't agree provoking spirits unnecessarily. But at the end of the day, we were showing people on an event that are paid to see this stuff happen. You know, that's what they come for. This is why people go ghost hunting. They want to see how things work. And I've been to a few events myself where people have just sat there and done nothing, you know, and nothing's happened. And then they'll go home and they'll moan, nothing happened. Well, what do you expect?
Right, you didn't interact with it, you know.
And as weird as it sounds, since me and Daniel studied serial killers, or studying, I should say, different types, how they think, criminal profiling, torture methods, things like that, just talk to them. I know it sounds weird, but these people are killers. They're not, yes, they're human, but they weren't human when they did what they did. So if you talk how they talk, like come across, like for example, take Ted Bundy, Ted Bundy, torture, or BTK, for example. If I had BTK, I would talk to him about torture. He would react to that.
That's interesting.
Because I'm having a general conversation with him as a human being.
Yeah, see, I would probably approach it differently, but if it works for you...
A lot do.
I mean, that's...
A lot do. And we've spoken to a lot of teams about this, because there has been backlash with it, and yet there's been a lot of appraise with it. But I want to hear what other people think about it. And I'd said this to these two girls.
Yeah, it seems to me like if you're talking to them like a murderer, like yourself, is a murderer, then it seems to me like you'd be pissing them off. You know what I'm saying? Or is that what you want to do? That's what you want to bring out, that investigation.
But if you're talking to it as a person, you're talking to it as like your best mate. He's not your best mate. He's just killed people.
Mm-hmm.
That killer has killed somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you talk to him as a normal person? You wouldn't. In real life, would you? This is how I got my point across. Take the Mendes brothers, for example. They killed their parents. Would you talk to them as killers? Or as normal people?
Well, probably killers, yeah.
What's the difference in the afterlife? That's my big point.
Uh-huh.
That is my point. And when I spoke to Paranormal Unveil, the two ladies, now these guys have only been investigating a year and a half, and they've done a few big things themselves and seen stuff. And I said it to them, and I got one of the most rapid responses I never expected. They both turned around and said, we would have done the same. You stood out. That was the difference. And when she said that, I then realized that I did stand out.
Uh-huh.
I didn't follow a script. For me, the paranormal field is like a group of sheep. We're a big flock and we all follow each other. We do the same things time in, time out. What do we honestly do different now? That's different. We have to be different. If you want to stand out, you know that.
I was going
to
say this, as in any of your investigations, has anything that stood out to you that just scared the dickens out of you? You know what I'm saying?
I've been attacked. I found the photos, actually. I'll send you them over tomorrow morning. I don't know if I mentioned on the phone when I had you on the show about the portal between the two houses.
Uh-huh.
And me being hospitalized, I found the photos. I actually found the photos a few days ago, and I've spoken to the gentleman that was involved, Mickey Vermouge, and he's going to meet up with me again, and we're going to go for it all. But I was hospitalized for three weeks. Basically, my ex-partner's mother thought she was a white witch, and she summoned something through a mirror of some sort. Didn't know what it was or anything. Nasty presence. Always fed on negative energy. Now, the problem you have at the time is I've got mental health, my partner's got mental health, her children have got mental health through previous relationships, and not only that, two of us have got autism, the youngest one and me. So our energy is changing all the time, constantly. But to make it worse, it was an old concentration camp we lived on. Outside, there was all sorts. Outside, we had a fresh pot, like lake, literally 10 foot from the house. We had pylon lines. We had the woods. It was basically an old concentration camp for Germans, Polish and Italians. Now, my ex-partner's father at the time, when he was alive, bless him, he had this tree outside where we lived, and it had his grandparents' and his parents' ashes. He decided to remove that tree, but how he did it was very unorthodox. And when I spoke to my friend about this, the church got involved about this because it was quite serious. He basically taken out this tree, burnt it and replanted it, but buried it upside down, which apparently is supposed to be some form of satanic ritual. So he basically offered his parents and his grandparents' souls to the devil and didn't even know it. So that kicked off with energy.
I never heard that.
I didn't know this either. Uh-huh. But I spoke to this ordained minister about it, and he was explaining it all to me. But the problem we had was we had four unmarked Italian war graves there as well. So that was affected. We basically lived on a bloody cemetery. Massive, massive cemetery. But we didn't know.
A lot of activity on any type of burial grounds that you put something on or near.
Yeah, it's weird. It didn't start until she summoned it through. I mean, don't get me wrong, the grandmother and the grandfather are always there in the bungalow. We were all sitting down eating tea at one point, and the boys watched the door handle pull down and let go right in front of them. We're talking 2 foot from them. This door handle came down and it flipped back up again. So they've seen all this. What we hadn't seen, and this was my first experience, was the darker side. It took me out. I had breathing difficulties. I had a massive seizure, which had knocked me completely right out. I was hot, blue lighted. But as we left the grounds of the actual house, the bungalow in the house, as soon as we were off the grounds, all my stats returned to normal. Everything went back to normal. But I was still taken to hospital and spent 3 weeks there. Best holiday I ever had. But I learned a lot that day.
Mm-hmm.
Because then I had to get other people got involved in this because it became serious. I think we had something like 8 mediums in the end, and there was like 3 teams. There was about 40 or 50 of us involved in this. But I had to come back after 3 weeks, obviously. I came back we put a plan in place and we went hunting for it. So we sent everyone away by myself and Mickey, and we went hunting for it. We're in the mother and father-in-law's place at the time. We're in their bedroom, and I've got the pictures now, so I'm going to show you them soon. He took the picture, and over his right shoulder is a body with no head. It's a black shape with no head. Three different pictures. It'd been using the mirrors to portal between both houses to affect everybody, but it only affected me in the end. But we got it. Mickey all done his ordained thing with the church, everything else, blessed the house. But as we were, how can I put it, as it was leaving, or as the atmosphere was changing, they've got a big 50-inch TV in the front room, and all I remember is watching three nail marks appear on the screen. Must have been about 4 inches long, and then bang, everything disappeared, and it was like the big weight being lifted.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing. It was back to normality. Now we know, me and my ex-partner know, there's over 500 dead roaming outside outside the buildings, both house and bungalow, because obviously it was concentration camp. None of them didn't know whether they had passed. Some of them were confused. Others were just being walking through. We accepted that. We loved that. But when this thing came, no.
You definitely believe in the afterlife then?
Yeah, I have to. Mm-hmm. Not because I've had that, but I've physically passed myself three times through illnesses and everything else that's gone on, stupidity. But I've passed, and that's where I've seen things because of that. That's why I have what I have now, my empathy, my empath gifts as such. I don't call them, so it's weird because people say PTSD. Now I have physical photo image PTSD. So I get to remember pictures. If I see something, I can remember it 10 years later. What people think is that's a gift. It's not, it's a curse. It can be the same as an empath. Being an empath can be a curse, but a lot of people see it as gifts. Now, I've seen some people just say you're naturally born with it. You know, it's neither a gift or a curse. And you're like, oh, what?
Yeah, I think you can use it as a great gift if it's used properly, you know, and then it could be a curse because
you abuse your power.
You're constantly maybe contact with something you don't want to be contacted with.
Yeah, but this is what I mean. But people don't, you know as well as I do. A lot of people abuse what they have.
Mm-hmm. Or they don't know how to use it.
You know, yeah. And they take it for granted, basically. I mean, Daniel's starting to, you can't say train because there's no such word as train when it comes to paranormal. More like develop. And he's developing really well, very quickly. Since we started doing these interviews online, all these podcast interviews, he's become so much better reading people. You know, he's been giving people readings that are mediums and like gone, how did you know that? He's been doing this for quite a while with me, 6 years. And that, from what I met Daniel as, but bear in mind, me and Daniel didn't have these gifts at that time when we first started. Now we do.
Have you ever come across a spirit that they didn't know they were dead?
Many. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's heartbreaking.
That's what really bothers me, you know.
It's heartbreaking.
Oh, it is. Oh, my God, yeah.
Because how do you tell them?
Right. How do you break that
you
news?
Know, how can you tell somebody that you're dead?
Mm-hmm.
You've passed. You know, you need to either go towards a light or you need to find a purpose.
That's what was my next question. Do you believe you can move a spirit on, you know?
I have done a live feed. We did a event. I took the whole team out to do this.
Mm-hmm.
There was 15 of us. We went to Donington Air Museum. We picked up, Doncaster Air Museum, sorry. And we picked up three spirits through the whole night. So weird. All from three different time periods. So we picked up a young boy that had been killed in a car accident in the late 90s. There was a World War II pilot that was shot down. And they picked up, I believe, on somebody from World War I, maybe even earlier. Three gentlemen it was. So you picked up on two men and one lad, one young child. And the two old gentlemen looked after this young lad like they were his brother. You know, we've got them to do all sorts during this communication on this live feed. I've never seen anything like it. And towards the end, we made a decision that they should be moved on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what people don't understand is, yes, ghost hunting is fun. But that night, we watched the other team and other people come out. So we're watching members of the public who are getting involved with other people and doing their own thing. And one of them come out and shouted, oh, we've just contacted Zozo. Oh, Busby of Zozo, two of them, he brought up, and he's shouting it. You know, that was halfway through the night. And I said to the team, right, if this is going to continue, we're moving these on. Why should they have to be... Because as far as I was concerned, they were being used as circus clowns. Uh-huh. Nothing else. So my ex-partner, who is a medium, she decided that we would try and help move them on. We'd never done this before. And we actually asked during the live feed, we had a couple of Americans on, how do we help move these three gentlemen over? And they basically told her, and she did it. And the weirdest thing is watching all your equipment look like flying off, different colours, beeps, everything, loads of noise. And as soon as they've gone, they've left through this door that she got them to go through. Everything goes dead. You've lost everything.
That's a moving experience, you know.
You know, I felt for them three gentlemen, especially the little boy. Some kid had been killed in a car accident.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he was brought in by a helicopter, but he had the attachment came through a helicopter. One of the Sea Kings that was brought through. And I was like, he's not staying here. Not if people are going to be shouting that around. Or, because you know as well, I keep saying to people, if you learn to respect them, they will respect you. This is why I don't have protection. I don't believe in the protection thing. If you're going to get hit, you're going to get hit. But if you respect them, you won't need protection. They'll protect you anyway. At the end of the day, it's still people. And Daniel's the same. Daniel's never had protection. He's never been hit. I got hit once due to somebody else's stupidity. People in the paranormal have to understand that these are people. If you talk to them like people, like I talk to the killer like a killer, they will communicate with you and they won't fly off the handle. They will genuinely have a conversation with you.
And I think that's what a lot of investigators, they lose the fact that these were once people. You know, these were people, not just something that's in the thin air. I mean, they were people. You know, they were here and their spirit are still here.
Yeah, I mean, you wait till they pass over. That's going to be the experience. Because they've got it coming themselves.
I'll be right back with the rest of my conversation with John Paul with the Spooks and Ghouls International. Do you prefer to do a residential or like business?
Right, so business I've stopped for the last year and a half due to greed. A lot of places have upped their prices and haven't lowered them. The greed is phenomenal within the paranormal field for location. It's disgusting.
Uh-huh.
To put it in perspective, I got quoted for one location, £6,000.
Whoa, Jesus.
Right, that's for an 8-hour investigation. I have to have 10 members of staff. I had to be covered for £10 million insurance, which wasn't an issue, I already was. But I could only take 60 people. How do I tell 60 people they got to pay £100+ a ticket? You, that's disgusting.
It is.
Now, I tried something back in the three year ago. I tried something as an events company. And that was I dropped all my prices of the tickets to make no profit on any of it just to get people to go out on investigating and build the company up. And you know what? I struggled. And I still to this day don't understand why people are paying £100 for a ticket when they can get it at £30 somewhere else. It's ridiculous. But yeah, that's why I stopped that. So I wouldn't do commercial. And commercial, another problem with commercial is every location you go to, I don't know whether you've experienced it with commercial events, is the hauntings disappear. The energy starts to reside. It's no longer there.
Right. It's been hit so many times.
It's a farm.
And so many I'm going to say unprofessional.
Yeah, that would be the perfect word. That would be the perfect word.
They go in and they buy this stuff off of Amazon, and they think that they're a paranormal investigator, and they just call out anything, or they joke about it, or just respect the building or the person. I mean, it, and they step on everybody's toes. That's why I don't go to any place that have got more than two investigation teams in there, because it's just they're just not professional.
No, it's all about money at the point, at that moment in time there. But, like you said, people just go in to do what they want. To me, some paranormal today's paranormal investigators compared to 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago are so different. Today's investigators, I feel, half of them don't have a bloody clue what they're doing.
You got that right.
And that's really dangerous.
Or they call themselves an expert when they're not, you know.
Oh, my God. There is no expert in this field.
How can you have an expert in something that's you can't? It's unexplainable. I mean, you try to best you can with your gifts of being a psychic medium or empath or equipment, but and the bottom line is, you know, if anybody could put a, you know, prove that that thing is demonic, you know, there'd be a lot of millionaires out there. But I mean, everything, all these shows on TV want to say everything's demonic. You know, that was my next question, is have you ever came across anything demonic?
Oh, wow.
There's a thin line between an angry spirit and the dark side, the demonic side.
I found the videos. I've actually got the videos of this now, and I've got the pictures. This is what I've been looking for this house. We're a private investigation for a lady. Now, short story is, we call her Mrs. P. She had a business with another lady, which dealt with crystals, the paranormal sort of thing back in the 70s, 80s. Now, this other lady, her partner was struggling financially. What we didn't know is she dabbled in the darker side. And she offered her soul, her friend's soul, Mrs. P's soul, to the devil as payment for financial gainment. Now, I didn't think any of this was true at the time. I'm not going to lie, I was like, yeah, whatever, this is absolute crap. So I've gone in with, I had an open mind, but I couldn't believe this. It wasn't until I saw Mrs. P did I realise what had really been going on. I've got 4 of her books from 4 of the 24 years of her life where she's witnessed multiple entities. The fact that she went through 27 different marriage ceremonies with the devil. One of them sticks out for me, and I've got all 4 books here. She said it was like a Japanese ceremony. She was in a white dress. There was loads and loads of young female virgins in 2 lines, and she was in the middle of them all. And all of a sudden, these Japanese warriors came up and slit all their throats, while all the blood drained her dress, just as she was offered to the devil for marriage. I was like, she on drugs? This lady was not on drugs. She had a clear mind. The other problems we had experienced when we got to the house was, she had been going to a spiritualist church, and they were teaching scrying methods and everything else. But 25 years ago, she opened up a portal scrying for a mirror. She asked for help to close it down, everything else. And the teacher at the time, at the spiritualist, basically told us to F off. Do it yourself. So she didn't get no help. So she had that on top of the devil thing going on. Then she lost her husband, and then she was scammed £30,000. So within the 25 years, she'd lost her husband to cancer, lost 30 grand through being scammed, lost her business because her partner sold her soul to the devil, and the fact that she opened up a portal she couldn't do, you know, she had that spirit in there as well, and she wasn't able to close it down. But outside the house, and I've got the picture as well of that, is the garden, the memorial of her husband's grave in the garden. Now, his spirit was trapped outside. He couldn't get in to protect her because the portal had been opened up in a conservatory area, which was also locked off from the front room. And then in the house itself, I found it very quickly, basically. I found the main probable cause. It's in her bedroom. Have you ever watched the film The Entity?
Mm-hmm.
This is the English version of it, real life. I have the videos of the spirit through SLS camera. One point he was at the side of her bed. I've got the video footage of it above her bed while she would have been sleeping. She's actually been assaulted several times in her life since this has all happened.
Mm-hmm.
When I saw Mrs. P, I was expecting just, you know, a normal lady with colour in her cheeks. And she was whiter than Casper the ghost. She was so scared. When Mickey and his daughter, they were both our ordained ministers, approached her, she jumped back in fear. It was petrifying to see. I'd never seen anything like this. And this is where I started to see the stories change from what she'd been saying to what had really been going on. When this all kicked off and everything, and she started talking to us and telling us all this stuff, I couldn't help but cry. Now, everyone will tell you I'm one of those that doesn't cry. But this lady brought me to tears. How she was still alive and hadn't taken her own life, all this, I have no idea. We helped her. We spoke to her that night. We had tea with her and we stayed in the house. Now, my ex-partner and Mickey's daughter stayed upstairs next to her bedroom. Mickey blessed the bed so it couldn't get on the bed. We banished it from the bedroom. So it was, she had her first perfect night's sleep with us there for the first time in like 20, 30 years. So, you know, she was pretty good in the morning. But during the night, I slept downstairs on the floor with Mickey, who slept on the couch. Now, lo and behold, like I said, I hadn't seen some of this stuff before in my life until this point. I watched Mickey get thrown off at 3 o'clock in the morning, physically thrown off this couch, hit the floor. He got back on the couch, bolted up, looked at me and went, "What?" and fell back asleep. I couldn't sleep at that point because I knew that whatever it was in that room. And it proved right at the end. So we went out in the morning, we went and got breakfast, and we had a massive talk, the four of us, about, we went to a castle. We went to one of the castles in Wales, and we had to chill out. We had to work out what was going on. I had to tell him what I'd seen. I had to tell Mickey and everything. He's going, you know, this is really, really weird, all sorts. But I don't know if you've ever seen anything like this. And I still don't understand what I saw. But Mickey, as we were going back to the car just before we went to go and deal with the presence that was in our house, something entered his body. And when I say something entered his body, this is sound crazy as hell, but he actually identified himself as the Archangel Michael or Gabriel or something, one of the two. And that angel with Mickey and me in the house, because we took the girls outside with Mrs. P. She stayed out of the house. We had to deal with this on our own. I don't like females around things like this when I'm trying to deal with something serious. The last thing I want is them to get hurt. So me and Mickey took it on. And this thing fought Mickey. I've never seen nothing like it in my life. Mickey literally used everything from the power of God to the church to whatever entered his body. And we actually witnessed this thing go into him. We saw his body change. He talked differently. You know, as soon as we got into the house, that was it. It was on. The war was on. It was brilliant. For me, now when I look at it, it was brilliant. But at the time, it was scary as hell.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we're doing live feeds. We've got the cameras on. Mickey's talking them through it, everything else. And then all of a sudden, it all stopped. And then Mickey picked up what looked like the entity or the dark presence. This thing was amazing. I don't know what it was. People think it's Busby because it came through its multiple personalities as one person. One presence managed to split itself into different personalities. And that's what she identified as different people at the time through the 30-odd years. But just as it's about to disappear, it tried to enter my body via my legs, and we got the video somewhere of it running around in between my legs, and then you watch it disappear within about a minute or two. We did it on live feed, and that was it. The house was gone. Me and Mickey sat down, spoke about it for like 10-15 minutes, and I said to Mickey, "Is that it?" And he's like, "Yeah, that's it. It's gone. It's over." I went, that's got to be one of the most traumatic things I've ever gone through in my life. I've seen people killed. I've witnessed car accidents. I've seen all sorts, murders, the lot. But that traumatized me. Not because it tried to enter me or anything like that. It was the fact that we couldn't see it. And it had done that much damage to that poor old lady.
And the fact that it could do that, you know.
It's phenomenal. And it, like, we brought her back in. She went into the front, into the kitchen, made Mickey a cup of tea, and I went in with Mickey to speak to her. Now, Mrs. P's husband died of cancer, like I said, but he was an alcoholic and he wasn't a very nice man to her. Mickey being a medium, her husband came through once we got rid of everything and cleansed it all. And he gave her a message, and that was, your husband's here. He's telling us that basically he was a complete arsehole to you. He didn't deserve you. You deserved a lot better. And he's so sorry the way he treated you. And she broke down in tears. You know, it was unbelievable. He was allowed in the house and she knew he was there, you know. I speak to Mrs. P on a regular basis still now to this day. She's got a new business. She goes out every day. She's been on 7 holidays. She's got friends again. She's a different woman. Mm-hmm. It's a big success. It's one of my big success stories. And for me to witness that is a privilege.
Mm-hmm.
That was an honor for me to see what I saw that day.
I should have asked you this right at the beginning. What got you interested into the paranormal to begin with? I mean, what led you into all of this? You know, your show, your podcast, what led you into this field?
Right, so I met another gentleman from the armed forces who had mental health issues, and he was studying demonology. I didn't have a clue on any of his stuff. It was just me. I played computer games. That was it. He asked if I wanted to go out with him one night on an investigation. It was February 18th, 2018. It was Grimsby Woods, I'm trying to think. It was the folklore is, or the myth is, the Grey Lady. I went out, I did recordings with him, I came back, I took pictures, which I found, it's amazing what I found since all of this. And I found pictures of what I took, my very first picture I ever took. One was in his bungalow downstairs, his flat. And it looks like a child holding a raccoon teddy bear in night vision mode. Another one on the same night is, I got a picture of what looks like the Soul Collector on a ship, on the front of a ship with a captain in the corner of the window. And then further on from that, on the same night, I caught what I call my very first picture, is Chubby Cheeks, which is a baby smiling in a road traffic collision scrapyard with loads of cars. I just caught it out of the blue. But you can see the face clear as day.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what, from that day, you know, my life changed. I went for a massive, we all say midlife crisis, but no, my life changed. I went from nothing to somebody in a matter of years doing this. I have seen more than I wanted to see, but at the end of the day, I'm privileged. I've seen what I've seen, and I can say I've done things, you know. And it wasn't just that. There was my son as well, my youngest. Obviously, because I'm an injured vet, I can't do much. And I didn't want him growing up to think his dad was nothing. And of course, when I got on TV, and then I got my radio shows and I started doing a podcast and that. My son's school friends now are like, every time they see him, they're playing the Ghostbuster tune going, who are you going to call? And it's Connor's dad. And you know what? He turned around and he said that was the proudest moment of his life. And I just thought, my father never made me proud. I was never proud of my dad. Never.
And for him to say that with the field you're in, you know, because a lot of people call people like us crazy or out there, you know what I'm saying? So to have him have him look up to you in the field, that says a lot, you know?
Yeah, it was phenomenal for me. And I want him, he wants to start doing this. I mean, I've got his mum, she's got the ghost bug back down where she lives, and she's done a lot of investigations. She goes on events as a public member. But she's asked whether I come down and do a private one, bring my son on, take all her friends. This is what I mean. I never had any of that with these people. None of this. Now all of a sudden these people are asking me to do things.
Yeah, but I've had people on my show before from the UK, you know. I had one guest tell me that there's not a castle in the UK that's not haunted.
Ooh, that's interesting.
And that the UFO activity, you know, I've had the leader of the MUFON was on my show, British UFO Network.
Experienced the UFO side of it.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, UK is
for castles. Yes,
you're in a prime spot as far as like me having people on my show. I mean, besides the United States, and I mean, it's all over the world. Tomorrow, my guest is from the outside of Italy. So it's
nice.
So it's like it's everywhere. You're going places, it's everywhere.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I've got this month alone. Obviously, as you know, I'm fully booked. Tomorrow I've got, or today I should say, at 8 o'clock, I've got Paranormal Penny Pinchers, their UK team. I've got an Italian on, I've got a Greek, a German, three Australian teams, a New Zealand team, a Japanese team. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get an Indian team on as well, but there's a bit of a language barrier with that, yeah. You know, with only one of them being able to talk minimum English, we should say.
Mm-hmm.
But it is... Like you said, it's phenomenal. It's happening all over the world. And I watched, believe it or not, I watched an Indian team do one of their videos. It's just like ours, you know, where you go out, you look at things, and you're like, they investigate it. But their following is absolutely phenomenal. I'm talking like 200,000-300,000 watchers watching it. And they're out in the field. Not that I had a clue what they were doing
mm-hmm.
or saying at that point, but their followings are phenomenal. Absolutely massive. I didn't realize it was that popular. But then, actually, I don't know if you know, but we've got a co-host, an American co-host, Gary Fisher, who
I've seen his background, yeah.
Yeah, he's ex-US Forces. And he was telling us about when he was over in Iraq and that, where he was on a base. And then he found a building and he was being drawn to it, pulled to it, but it was all boarded up. And he said to one of the commanders, you know, any chance I could get in there? He said, no, not a chance, mate. That's where they used to hang all the Iraqi commanders and all that. I said, you need to get in there, you need to get in there. He said, no. They frown upon it. They're frightened of it. If there's, you know, if there's anything like that, the Western side, oh, no, they don't want to know about it. I was like, that's odd. Because
mm-hmm.
he said it was so powerful, it was physically drawing him in. And that's without equipment.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So for something like that to be pulling you in, it's got to be serious.
Yeah. Now, on your show, is everything paranormal?
No. See, this is another thing that's been brought up lately with a lot of my friends and colleagues and people I've started working with, and that is, explain the word paranormal to me. What is paranormal?
To me, the paranormal is the unexplained.
Right. So people who say ghosts... paranormal is, for me, it's totally wrong. You have witchcraft, we have mm-hmm. warlocks, we have UFOs, we have cryptics, we have myths, we have folklores, we have spirits, then you have ghosts. It's all paranormal. The paranormal isn't just ghosts, it's one massive field.
Right.
And it branches out. Now, right. We're branching out now, as you well know.
That's why I agree with that 100%. You know, it's all that. It's not just one. You can't just, some people just, they only concentrate on UFOs, you know.
Yeah.
Like growing up, and my book just came out, you know, my friend, he concentrated on UFOs because that's what he was having mental telepathy with. My mind was a ghost because of what I was experiencing. So even though we're both paranormal, he was a different side, you know. So I had a hard time understanding his stories, and he had a hard time understanding mine. But
you put them together.
You put them together, and you almost have the same type of
person.
Right. I mean, it's hard, you know, you can't explain a lot of things. You know, is it supposed to be conquered? I don't know. You know, how do you explain an alien abduction? You know, how do you explain that? So
you can't, can you?
No. I don't know who can.
But then you listen to people's experiences of an alien abduction.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's where your questions start to come in. Now, as a paranormal investigator or ghosts we deal with. As soon as we see something, we start to question it. It's natural. Mm-hmm. It's the same as UFOs, cryptids. You question it, and that's where it all starts to come in. The investigation is that we are all the same at the end of the day. We just study a different subject, but we're all linked. Like I said, you put you and your friend together, there's no difference between you. The difference is, he does aliens, you do ghosts, but you're the exact same person.
Mm-hmm.
The way you investigate everything. Now, I've now gone as far as this weird. I've been interviewing horror actors. I have two horror film directors, Antonio and, I can't think of his, Mandy Camero, or Cameo, I think their surname is. Sorry, if they hear this, then I do apologise, guys. They've just done Friday the 13th, Blood Loss. Spoken to the original Jason Lawes actor.
Mm-hmm.
The very first Jason Lawes actor. You know, these people, believe it or not, have, because they're into the horror thing, in a way, it sort of crosses our fields. Let's be honest, right? Somebody, an actor plays a serial killer. We know that serial killer can become, in our world, as such, our field, as the spirit, can come through. We know he can act. It's possible he could still harm. For an actor to play that serial killer, they have to be that person.
Mm-hmm.
That is as close as you'll get to the real thing, but alive.
Right.
And I find that's where I start to come in with it, one like that. Jack the Ripper's another one, big one for me. You know, when people start playing parts and I can get these people on, they go, I did this, I did that. He was like this, he was like that, but he did that. And you learn things that you haven't seen in a book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they've gone further into it with their research that we can't go into with certain things. And they've picked it all up and you're like that. It's like, I'd love to do the guy, you know, the actor that played Jeffrey Dahmer in the latest Jeffrey Dahmer series.
Mm-hmm.
He also did American Horror Story. I think that guy is phenomenal.
Oh, yeah, to step inside that. And he did that Jeffrey Dahmer awesome. I mean, he did a great job.
Wow, didn't he? He was so dead cold, wasn't he? Yeah, when he enters the apartment, he becomes very cold as in feelings. He's focused. He knows his end game. He knows what he's got to do. And regardless, he's doing it. Whether you're seen or not, he's going to do it. He does. It's phenomenal how they got him to do that. I mean, I've been watching lately Mindhunters. I don't know if you know, it's on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
It's how they start criminal profiling. And they interview people like Edmund Kemper. There's a guy called Jerry Brutos, but I don't know who he is. John Wayne Gacy, they didn't do Gacy, he's Charlie Manson. They interviewed two of the Charlie Manson kids, or as they call them, the kids. They interviewed the very first black male serial killer. You know, all these people, all these names coming up, and I'm like that, wow, I'm in heaven here.
Mm.
But it was amazing. The actors are phenomenal. When they're talking about certain parts about Ed Kemper, when he's talking about how he killed these women, cut their heads off, and he puts them in the garden in the flower bed looking up at his mum, because his mum always wanted to be looked up to. So that's how he did that. That's why he did it. I was like, that's really crucial, I think. Mm-hmm. As somebody like him, because he recognized that, but he saw it from a different perspective. A lot of people ask me, do I admire a serial killer? No, I do not admire what they've done. I admire their brain and how they think, how they thought, and how they managed to escape the police. Because I'm not being funny, some of these murders were plain out brutal. Not only that, they were very easy to... The killer should have been caught straight away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were very clumsy. What's the name? Oh, the big one. Ted Bundy.
Ted Bundy, yeah.
Why wasn't he caught quicker? He was just... Oh, he was another one. And the guy that killed the nurses, that he killed 8 nurses?
Yeah, I can't think of his name.
Or 8 women? Yeah, him? He was sloppy as hell.
Yeah. On your show, have you ever had a guest on there that not just made you scratch your head, but say, what the, you know?
Yes, actually, and only 2 weeks ago. I interviewed a lady. and she's a prophecy giver, apparently. And we were talking about war, and we were talking about the next, or as it is, the sixth level extinction event within the planet. And she said she saw fire, lots and lots of fire, as in nuclear. Somebody, there is going to be a nuclear war. And I'm like, okay, when's this supposed to be happening? She went, next 2 years. I sat there 20 minutes, and I even said this so many times on the podcast, I don't know what to say to you anymore. I don't know how to talk to you. And I sat there and I thought to myself, what the hell am I supposed to do for the next 2 years?
Right.
You know, if she's saying this is a possibility, and let's be honest, right this moment in time, with 18,000 North Korean soldiers sat in the, going into Ukraine, it becomes it's an act of war. These soldiers going into the Ukraine, supporting Russia. It simply is.
Mm-hmm.
What's to say it's not going to happen as early as Christmas?
Next thing you know, it could very, very, very easily become another world war, you know.
It is a world war. It's starting. This is the thing. It's already started. NATO are involved. We're all taking in Ukrainian refugees. It's already started. China against Taiwan, you know. South Korea and another country. Oh, and the US trying to get North Korea to back down. It's not going to happen. She said at the end, it comes down to this. When, where, and how. And that was me then. I was like, what the? I came off. I messaged Daniel and I said, Dan, I just had one of the weird, this is worse than the body interview that I had. And he's like, what? And I told him, and he went, let's be honest, she's probably telling the bloody truth. We aren't that far off here. And that's not the point, Dan. Who the hell tells you when, where, and how? You know, I couldn't answer that. I had no answer to it. It was going over my mind constantly. It was like, what do I do? What do I do? What, you know, this could happen.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's been my pleasure, John Paul, having you on the show. And I'm going to have you back on next year. Yeah, like you said, I'm booked until the rest of the year. But yeah, next year I'm going to have all the people I really think just blew my socks off. You know, and you're one of them. So yeah, we'll hook it up. We'll do it. Well, John, it's been my pleasure, man.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Thank you, John Paul, from the Spooks and Ghouls International podcast. It really has been my pleasure having you on the show. I'm sure we'll talk again next year. And please go to Amazon, pick up my new book, Spencer's Ghost. It's based on my true story growing up in a haunted house. It's available in paperback and ebook. The links are at the bottom of this episode. The links to Spooks and Ghouls is also at the bottom of this episode. Take care, and we'll hook up again in another couple weeks with another great episode on Ghosts in the Valley podcast. 12-year-old Lee Spencer is in the back seat of his family's car as it's pulling up the driveway of the house they are moving into. Lee notices a young girl looking at him from the upstairs window. No one else in the car sees her. This is the beginning of a 4-year journey of Lee Spencer's unbelievable events that happened in and outside of that house. Spencer's Ghosts, available now on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple, any place you get your books. Available in paperback and ebook.